to Tips from the Server Room. This podcast is designed for all you systems admins, network specialists, or the guys and gals out there in the office who handles it all. Sit back, relax, grab a beverage, and enjoy Tips from the Server Room. Hey, yes, welcome back, everybody, once again to Tips from the Server Room. This is episode number 33 for February the 4th, 2014. I'm your host, Jack, and I'm going to help you to take that magical ride through your network to learn more things about your networks and your servers than you ever thought possible, or just to kind of bone you up and teach you a little bit or get us back on the tip of some of the basics that we may have forgotten. If you get a chance, please check out my website, and that is at tipsfromtheserverroom.com. You can also comment on these shows there, and I would appreciate it if you do. You can leave me voicemail at 724-701-0550. If you have any questions or ideas or topics for future shows, you can email me at jackstechcorner@gmail.com. You can also follow me on Twitter, and that is at Technoman. And you can also sign up for future newsletters if you wish to do so at tipsfromtheserverroom.com. We haven't yet really decided on what those are going to be, but we do know that they are eventually going to be there. Folks, if you have not found me here, and a lot of you are finding me on Spreaker.com, and that's really interesting to see how many listeners I am picking up on Spreaker, and I appreciate you being here and following me on Spreaker.com. You can catch the show live. Tonight we're actually starting here a little bit later because we had some commitments that we were actually working on. But we normally start the show at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on Tuesday nights. So we are live then. That's where you can come into Spreaker and you can chat. There's a chat room in there. You can actually chat, or you can catch us live on your smartphone or on your iPad or anywhere that you can actually download the software, listen on computers, or whichever you want to do. So tonight we're going to get into a topic. It's pretty techy. Even when I was preparing for tonight's show, I was like, wow, this is really, really getting deep into things and getting technical. And it's probably even deeper than where I normally go with my shows, but I think it's something that we need to talk about. It's something that we need to actually think about with our networks, and I think it's very important, especially with all the recent attacks out there. And I feel really bad for those tech guys, the server guys and networking guys working for Target stores. Marshall's stores, I think it was another one that was recently hacked. There's just so many. You hear about so many of the stores out there and stuff getting hacked and their credit card machines getting taken over and people stealing, you know, credit card numbers and all that personal information. And I truly believe that on the back end of things, the reason that happens is because we don't know how our network runs normally. And hey, folks, I've been guilty of this. I have been. You know, we don't have times. We spend most of our days as network administrators, computer specialists out there, and the guys and the girls working in the back closets of our life and our lifestyle. We spend a lot of time keeping it working, right? Or advancing it, making it better. And that's our motto so many times. And I tell my guys all the time at work that we are a service industry. You know, maybe not to the point where we're out making beds or cleaning hallways or like we have a maintenance crew, they go out, they fix lights and they mow grass. But we are a service industry. We service something that people need every day. You know, we're almost as important, if you think about it, as the refrigerator repairman. Think about if your refrigerator at home breaks, how long can you be without that refrigerator? Well, how long in business can you be without your computers, right? So we are a service industry, and we work very hard at that. And I believe everybody listening to the show out there is very good at what we do. And that's partly why you're listening to shows like this, is because you're trying to be better at what you do. I think that's so critical in our business. But what we need to do is we need to learn sometimes about stuff that we're not comfortable learning about. We need to try to get an understanding about some things that we have no understanding about it. and we have to try to make sense of it, even though it's almost unbelievable or unsensibility for us to even capture this in our brains because we're not trained for this. And what we're talking about tonight is called network forensics. All right, now don't shut the podcast off just now. You're like, what? Wait. This Jack is going way overboard. And like I said, when I was preparing for the show, I'm looking at this thinking, I need to do some of this. We need to be proactive in our business. We don't need to be reactive. By the time we react, your store, your network, your business, whatever you work on, work with, is way out there on the news media. And once the news media gets you, you are fried. Because who's the first guy they're taking out? Hey, you're right, guys and girls out there. They're taking out us. They're taking out the network guy. They're saying, wait a minute. That network guy did not know what he was doing or what he was talking about. They're taking us out. That's who they're going to get rid of. Because somebody has to be the fall guy. I mean, let's face it. You have to. Somebody's going to fall. Might as well be the tech guy, right? All right. By the way, if you're thinking about it, the little drink I just took there is tonight's beer is George Killian's Red. It's made by the Coors Brewing Company. It was originally an Irish beer, but anyway, try it out there. It's a George Killian's Red. Great beer. So, with that said, I'm sorry. We are going to move on here and talk about network forensics. Again, don't shut this podcast off. Listen, if you're in the car, just kind of pay attention as you're reading the road signs, going down the road, looking at the billboards, and seeing the different things out there in the world. Think a little bit about your network. So we need to be proactive, not reactive. And in preparing for tonight's show, I started to see things that we need to do, stuff that we've done, but we get away from it because remember, we're servicing. We're trying to make things better. We don't really care about how things are currently running. That's not really the key that we're worried about. So the first thing you're going to have to do here is you have to know how your network runs normally before it's attacked. That's key. So we're going to go over some of the stuff I found. I actually found a really good white paper on it that I took some notes out of. And that's how we're going to kind of go through this and talk about this a little bit. Now, whether your organization is big or small, you should have a network forensics solution up and running. Now, again, they do sell forensic solutions. They have ways of running an appliance on your network or running software on your network full-time, and companies are very, very good at this. And what they're looking for actually is any kind of suspicious activity, so anything that can say you're getting attacked. But we're going to talk today a little bit about going after this a different way, because I believe if you know how your network is running normally, then you would know if something abnormal happens, and that's key. So we need to talk a little bit, and we're going to be getting into some software here a little bit later in the show, about how you can run things on your network to see what's running normally. And the big thing, and we talked about this several shows ago, we talked about event viewers on servers. So many people, if something goes wrong, we as a society get to the point where, or we as technologists get to the point that we really want to dig down deep. And I get new guys all the time, and I get interns all the time from local colleges. Something happens. If a computer won't power on, for some strange reason, they want to tear the computer apart, rip the power supply out. But you know, they forget to say, well, the power strip was off. So even on networks, we need to step back and look at the little stuff first. The event viewer is going to clue you into if something happened, if something really went wrong on your servers, not your network at this point, on your server. And if your networking is getting attacked, folks, they're not attacking your switches, right? That's not where people want to go. They're going for the data. They want to get into your servers. That's the key. That's where they want to be. Or if you're smart, like that hacker at the Target thing, that whole Target thing, I would have never thought of that. Instead of waiting for people to scan cards and then going to a server and then taking that file out, why not scan them live? So as people were scanning their cards, running them through the registers, that data was getting captured by the hacker live. So that kind of, you know, security breach would be so hard to find because it's happening in real time. Somebody's not logging in and taking a file and copying it out, which you could see that. You could find out that happened. It's harder to see if somebody's pulling your data live. But you need to have a starting point. So that's why they're talking about this forensic solutions up and running. I believe you have to have a forensics, even if you do it yourself, even if you're not a forensics investigator, and we intern a lot of forensics investigators from a lot of different colleges, some of these guys are crackpots. Some of these guys will be so good at what they do. They are amazing. Some of the other guys, I said, hey, can you get me a password off this computer? And they couldn't figure it out if you gave them the password. So it's like any other business. So what is network forensics? Let's talk about that first. What is it? What does network forensics mean? Well, forensics of anything is the study of. Is that correct? It's the study of something. So network forensics is the capture, the storage, and the analysis of network events. So that's what network forensics is. Again, it's the study of. So it's the analysis of the network events. You might also hear it referred to as packet mining, packet forensics, or digital forensics. Whatever the name is, basically what you're doing is you're looking at every piece of data going through your network, and you're going to examine it, and you're going to know what becomes normal traffic. And then when you know enough normal traffic, you will learn about abnormal traffic. So this means you're going to be looking at all and not digging into. Don't think I'm telling you to read people's emails, although some packet software out there we found is really good for this. But you're looking at all email traffic just to see what the normal flow is, all database queries, and all web browsing activities. Again, you don't really care what people are browsing. You just want to know what the normal port 80 traffic is on your network, what the normal database query traffic would be on your network. And you want to know, believe me, we got nailed with this big time before, is you want to know what the email traffic is across your network. You have to understand this and know what the normals are, because I think that's really key. Now, let me go back just a minute and tell you how we got nailed with this. Our internet provider called me one afternoon and said, look, Jack, you have an abundance of emails coming out of your network. And we were shooting out 10,000 emails every minute. 10,000. We were bombarding our ISP's network, which was a local ISP, so a smaller guy. But we were bombarding his network. I mean, we were slamming it to the point of no return. And to the point where they call, they see it. So they're monitoring their networks and they know what's going on. Thank goodness, because we didn't know. And what happened was, after they called, I had to start looking, because obviously, we run, again, a big network. We have 700 nodes plus, because now we have bring your own device. So our student body and our teachers are bringing their own stuff in the network. But we had a rogue machine out there. We had a machine that was taken over by something, and it was sending out spam emails. Well, I checked, and I found out that it was going out over the normal port. And the normal SMT port is 25. So what I did was I went to the firewall. And luckily, and we talked about this a few weeks ago, we talked about email, cloud email, or local email with Exchange. And it's a personal thing. Whatever you use, it's fine. But being we used a Google Docs, I knew that we didn't need port 25 coming out of our network. So I went to the firewall and I just blocked port 25. And that at least put a barrier up. So those emails couldn't go anywhere. The ISP became extremely happy and satisfied with me and called me and thanked me for doing so. We still had the rogue machine, which we did find after a while, and we did clean that up. So why do we need to do network forensics? Obviously, just like I said, we have to know what a baseline is of our network before we can know if something bad happened. So while security attacks get the most media attention, and they do, we talked about that, network forensics is much more acceptable and applicable on a daily basis for analyzing common network issues. And this is something too, not just attacks. It's going to help you understand your network, because as we grow our networks, and we are guilty of this one too, I tell my guys all the time, geez, quit plugging stuff into the switches without putting a label on of where it's coming from. Quit patching, and they want to punch down something in the patch panel and patch it in before they label the patch panel. everything has to be done in steps when you run a network, especially a large network or even a small one. You want to know when the boss's computer, I don't care if you have 10 computers on your network, if the CEO's computer, if the network drops out, you want to make sure you can go to a switch, wherever that is, and find his cable and know if his port went bad or something like that happened. You don't want to be like, well, I got to tone it out, boss. I got to find it. It's going to take me about a half hour. They don't want to hear that, right? Label your stuff. But what's going to happen is you're going to improve your network performance. You're going to tune up your intrusion detection solutions. So you're going to have some detection solutions, whatever that is. And I'm going to have to dig deeper into those because we're going to talk about that one week to try to set a, I always said, I want my servers, I want my switches to send me a text message when something's wrong, right? When there's a big data collision on a switch, send me a text message. And I have so many companies out there like, Jack, we don't have that. And I was like, you need to program that. That is huge nowadays. Also, you want to identify rogue devices accessing your network. We just talked about that. That server was a rogue device that was taking over my network, and it was just pounding and pounding my internet connection to the point where people were getting like web pages not found. You want to be able to stop network hacks and viruses. And folks, you should have something on your front end coming into your network to monitor your internet traffic, to look for virus activities and try to clean that up before it comes in. And I truly hope if you have your own email server, if you are running Exchange, I hope you have something like the Barracuda spam filter. We had one when we had Exchange, and it is amazing device. And they're not a part of the show or anything. They're not a sponsor. I wish they were, but they have amazing gear. That thing took our spam from, you know, some people was getting 1,500 spams a day down to zero. But it also kept out the viruses. That is key. If you can keep the viruses and the virus signatures out of your email, people won't be able to click on them because they won't be there. Also, you want to be able to monitor network usage for regular and corporation compliance. You want to make sure people are doing what they're supposed to be doing. So many corporations out there, and I don't know why, and it totally blows my mind because I think you're way off base if you're doing this. They want to block things like Facebook and Twitter because, damn it, the people got to work and they got to stay on task. Well, you're right. But you know what? It's easier for me for the user to be looking at their computer screen working and seeing their Facebook feed than having to get their damn phone out every 10 minutes to see who sent them a message on Facebook or Twitter, right? Because they're going to do it anyway, folks, because you have 3G and 4G, and it's against the law to scramble those in your business. So you can't, it's against FCC regulations. You can't scramble them because we looked into it, and you're not going to do it. So there's my little rant. So leave the stuff open and let them go. But you are monitoring for compliance. And what you're, well, like we have a web filter. We have to, obviously, being in education, we have to filter by law for pornography. And there's a certain other stuff we filter. Like I found Tumblr.com is huge for pornography, and we don't want the kids on there, so we filter that. But other than that, we have a pretty open network. The kids can do a lot of stuff on our internet. Because if you're going to provide, especially in education, if you're going to provide an educational tool, how about this? Let's give the kids all a textbook, but let's rip all the pages out of it. Right? It doesn't make sense. So the same things in corporations. If you say, look, here's a corporation, you're doing CAD drawings, but you can't do any Google searches. So if they get hung up on a CAD drawing, how do they even search for help for that drawing? You know what I mean? And in business, these aren't kids, folks. These are adults. You're dealing with adults. Okay. They may have kid tendencies at times, but they are adults. All right. So here's another one. And this is what I liked. This is what we were just talking about. Monitoring users' activity. Social networking sites like Facebook and Twitter have been shown to sap productivity in the workplace. As a result, many organizations have their user policies that prohibit or at least they try to curb such activities. That is so bogus. I can't even start talking to it. Okay, so the CEO walks up and this is a big one even. If you're in business, if you're a nonprofit organization and you told people they can't use Twitter or social media, guess what? You just ruined about $100 million funding stream for your your nonprofit right there. You ruined it. Social media is how you can reach your donors. It's so critical. And even in business, maybe in business, social media is a great way to reach out to, you know, potential clients. So it's more than just, they're not sitting there looking at grandma's pictures of her birthday cake. They could be working. Open your mind up. Don't look at it as a personal communication tool. Look at it as a business communication tool. And I think you're going to start seeing that these social media outlets out there are huge in what you want to do. And if you don't understand that, get a hold of me and I'll come out and I'll do some consulting work with you and show you how you can capture that stuff to make your company more money. It's so important to be able to use that. So don't look at it as being looking at baby pictures. And maybe they do, and I'm sure they do that also, but open your mind up a little bit. Okay, so we're going to identify a source of data leaks is the next thing we're going to look for. So as the data leaks occur, you want to be proactive. Remember, reactive doesn't work in this business. By the time we react, it's over. Our data is stolen. Now you're doing the whole target thing. You're doing damage control. We don't want to be a business doing damage control, especially if you work for a bank. Imagine if you work for a bank and you call me and say, "Hey, Jack, we just lost all your banking information and your accounts were just cleared out." I'm not going to say, "Hey, good job. Why don't you try to fix it?" I'm going to be mad, right? Just like anybody would be extremely mad. So anyway, you want to be proactive. You want to monitor your network and you want to understand what information is released and how much of that data is actually used daily. Okay, now if you're using network forensics, you can track down culprits and you can determine how leaks are happening, either accidental or on purpose. So we're talking about data leaks, and again, you have to monitor your networks. Now, do we have time to sit and monitor every bit of our network traffic? I know I don't. We have a lot of stuff we have to deal with. We have a lot of individual users. But if you're a big enough corporation, and I sure wish I would work for a corporation like that and run one, I would be so happy to be a CIO of a corporation where I can have a whole team of technologists and say, "Look, Johnny Walker, you're doing nothing but monitoring network traffic. You're going to know everything coming in, going out. That's your job. If you see anything suspicious, you will notify me immediately, and we will track it down and stop it from happening." But we don't. So hopefully you can capture stuff, and we'll talk about data analysis in just a little bit and how we can capture stuff without actually being there and then look at it, over time at different times. Because you just have to understand what's normal to see if something bad happened, and then maybe you will know what was taken before your boss or the media knows what was taken. Now, business transaction analysis. This is a little bit bigger. This is on the business side. So it's transactions that take place in clear text, such as things like SQL, HTTP request, it's clear text, FTP, clear text, Telnet. Then the network forensics allow the network administrator to create the ultimate audit trail for business transactions. So what they're saying there is, we talked earlier about SQL queries and how the query is done. So if you see every day, and we have quite a few SQL databases running on our network, so I see every day that our food service department queries the network to see how to make fried chicken wings or whatever. And all of a sudden, I start seeing a large amount of SQL requests to the food program to start seeing how much money is in each person's account. Well, that would be abnormal because it's not looking up a chicken wing recipe then. It's looking up cash flow stuff. So that would be very abnormal. And that would clue me into something's going wrong with that business transaction. Same thing if your company never uses Telnet. So maybe nobody, our unit, nobody, I don't think anybody uses Telnet. So if nobody uses Telnet and you start to see a lot of Telnet traffic, chances are there's a hacker out there trying to come in your network with the Telnet protocol, trying to get into your servers or your back end. So this isn't just for server activity, though. It's also for business transactions enacted by clients and servers. Because remember, your servers will put out a certain amount of traffic on your network also. So overall, what purpose does network forensics serve? Network forensics allow you to find the details of your network events after they happened. It essentially allows you to reconstruct the history of the entire network. Again, remember, we have to have that baseline of the network first. It's so important to have that baseline first. Once we have that baseline, then we know when something is abnormal. Network forensics can reveal who communicated with whom, when, how, and how often. It can uncover the low-level address of the systems communicating with other systems. So in other words, let's say, for instance, if your business is a daylight business only. So at 4 o'clock, you know that everybody leaves your office. But every day at 8 o'clock, you start to get a bunch of network chatter. You start to get a lot of requests against your SQL databases. You start to get a lot of requests against your employee files, against your employee information databases, your HR department databases. This is the kind of stuff that if you know normally, and that would be easy to find, right? Because you look at the timestamp and you would be able to see exactly what's happening on your network. We actually had one of our folks come to us the other day. And he says, how do I get into wireless devices? Well, being we're a BYOD school, our wireless devices, we don't password protect them any longer because we want the student body to be able to use those. So we set up a student access, okay, a student SID, and we give access to that SID. But what happens at 6 p.m. is our wireless shuts off. So it deactivates. So I know there can't be any network chatter after 6 p.m. unless somebody would turn the wireless back on, which isn't going to happen because it's a very much automated system. So it can't happen. But that's the kind of stuff that I would see. And if I would see any network chatter on my wireless at 9 o'clock at night, I would obviously know something was going terribly wrong. That is for sure. All right, so how does network forensics work? And basically, probably anybody listening to the show, maybe you are, and if you are, write in and let me know that I was wrong. But I would say most of us, probably at least 98% of us, are not network forensics people. We're just not. If you're listening to this show and you know I talk more about servers and networks and fixing networks and fixing servers and using protocols for servers, we are more of the server industry type people, the network administrator people. We probably are not forensic people, but you have to know a little bit of it unless you have a lot of money you can pay these folks to come in and take care of your stuff. Now, with that said, there's basic types of investigations. And there's basically three of them. One is responding to a specific network incident. Again, we're reacting. You don't want to get there. The next is gathering background for an internal corporate investigation. So you're gathering up background for your forensic team to come in, or for your corporate, maybe your board's coming in. And they're saying, look, Mr. Networking Forensic Guy, tell us what happened. So you're you're the guys at Target, and you're sitting with this board now shaking their heads saying, what the hell happened? I mean, we thought we were secure. You said we had a firewall. And you're sitting there shaking your head. Yeah, we do. But we didn't see this coming. So you're going to build that background for your internal corporate investigation. The next is when the FBI comes knocking on your door. And they start asking you for all your papers. They want to ask you for all your data. They want to ask you for all your log files. And that happened to us when we ran our own internet business. We had that knock on the door, and you'd be supporting a criminal investigation at that time. Back then, ours was a whole different incident of why that happened. But one of our users was doing something bad on the internet, and we had a team of FBI agents come to the internet provider that I owned. And they said, we want all your log files, and we want to know what this user was doing, when this user was on, when this user logged on your systems to gain internet access. And we had to provide all that because, you know, when they're standing there and they're holding that little warrant up saying, look, we're going to take this. You could either give them what they want, or they would just commandeer your servers and take those. They don't really care. All right, so the basic elements of a network forensic Okay, it's a solution. I'm going to tell you the basic elements of a network forensic investigation or how to start. First thing is capturing and recording data. Now, this is the ability to capture and store multiple terabytes of data from high throughput networks, for example, 10 gigabytes. We don't have any 10 gigabytes networks, without dropping or missing any packets. Every network forensic solution has its limitations, including some limitations, packets per second, data management, such as fractions and etc. These limitations can and should be determined through practical lab tests, and the results should be repeated and documented. Next is discovering data. Once data is recorded on a storage media, the solution should provide a mechanism to filter particular items of interest. For example, certain IP addresses, certain applications, certain contexts, certain ports, and etc. Next thing is you should be able to analyze the data. Finally, you want some built-in assistance for examining the patterns found during the discovery process to help you determine what actions were recorded in the captured packets. Again, so critically important. Just going back down through my notes here real quick. All right, so the last things I wanted to clear up with you here is we're going to talk a little bit about packet sniffers. Now, if you've never used a packet sniffer, I did find some free solutions for you. The one that we use a program called Wireshark. It's free. It works on Windows machines. There's also one I found this evening called CAPSA. It's C-A-P-S-A. It's a packet sniffer. It's free. Another one is called SniffPass, which is a password sniffer. Look at that one, SniffPass, S-N-I-F-F-P-A-S-S. And I'm going to put links to these in the show tonight. So if you go to tipsfromtheserveroom.com, right underneath the show, or right before the actual show, the player, you'll see a list. I'll put the links in there for you tonight so you'll have these. But when you look at this one, you're going to just shake your head because I know I did. It's actually a network password sniffer. So you pull on, and all it does is look for passwords being transmitted across your network, and it's the only thing it shows you. And it does them all. So if somebody's on your network and they're logging into their banking site, you'll have their password. If somebody's logging into a library site, you'll have their password. It doesn't care. Now, if the password thing encrypts it on the website, it would get encrypted going across your network, and you may not see it. But from the look on the webpage, it looks pretty promising that it's going to see a lot of that stuff. Also, then there's the Microsoft Network Monitor if you want to use that. Now, we have found out before you're using any packet sniffers at all, you need to go to your switch, and hopefully it's a managed switch. So we go to our, look at it either way, I call it the last switch before the internet. So the internet line is actually plugged into this switch. And it's our main switch. So I have all my servers coming into that particular switch. And then what I did, I took port number, I'm trying to think in my head which one it is. I want to say 13. I think it's port 13. Anyway, you take the port and you put it into what they call transparent mode, or it may be called sniffer mode. But what it does, it allows that port to listen to all those other ports and take all the network chatter across all those ports. Because remember, on a switch, each port is isolated. That's the whole beauty of the switch. That's the whole idea behind it. So you have to open that port and allow it to see all the other ports. When you do that, you will plug that one computer into it that you're going to run this software on, either Wireshark or CAPSA or SniffPass or Microsoft Network Monitor. You start the application up, and then that application, when you hit start, capture packets, it's going to look like the stock market. It's going to be astronomical, the packets coming through there. But the idea that I had when I put all the servers into that switch also was I see all the network traffic going to the internet, inbound and outbound. And I get to see all the traffic inbound and outbound to my servers. So I get to see all that at one time. I think that's critical to be able to look at all that traffic at once. Now, with that said, you're not going to sit there and watch it. We tried, and doesn't make any sense to you. So what you do is you do a start capture and then just turn the monitor off on that computer. Or maybe it's just a computer and you're just, remote desktoped into it or something. But just turn, don't look at it. Let it go. It's going to capture those packets. And let it just capture packets and make sure you have a good size hard drive in there. Because remember earlier I said you have to have something that's going to capture a lot of data because it's going to be churning a lot of data for you. Go back to that machine, let's say, and you have to know, you'll learn your network traffic. With 700 nodes, if we go back to that machine in 3 to 4 hours, we have an awful lot of data. It gives us a good baseline. And I'll do that for 3 different days. I'll do Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. I can't do it every day. I just don't have the time to do it. And if I told you I was doing it every day, I'd be lying to you. And I don't want to lie to anybody on the show because you know them. A pretty straight shooting guy. So Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, we would do that. And we don't do it every day, every week of the month. Obviously, we don't have time for that. If you did it 1 week out of every month, let's say you take the second week out of every month and you write it down your calendar and you do that second week of every month, just turn it on and capture those packets. Turn it on, capture those packets, and you save those as log files. What's going to happen is later on down the road is you can analyze that and you can get a baseline. Or if nothing else, if something happens and you're going to be a little bit reactive, at least you have that baseline data and you know where it was coming from to be reactive from. I think that's key. You would know where it started. So anyway, at that point, you would know where it started at. So you'd be good to go there. Okay. So hopefully I gave you enough tonight to learn and be able to know what to do with it there. And just get this back in my notes here. If you want to learn any more about the network stuff, the sniffing stuff, like I said, I'm going to put these on to show tonight, so you will have these actual software. You can download those for free and try those out. And please, if you have any comments and suggestions or feedback on this topic, email me, leave it on my voicemail, put it in the comment section for the show. I'd really appreciate it. But if nothing else, at least give me your feedback on it because I want to know more too. I mean, anything we can learn more about this and being really, really proactive would be so, so important. So, folks, I really want to appreciate tell you how much I appreciate you being out there with me and joining these shows each week. It's because of you listening that podcasters like myself do this. It's why we put it together. I do ask that if you think about it and you say, hey, I buy from Amazon all the time, go to tipsfromtheserveroom.com and use my Amazon link. I mean, that's one way I can ask you to help the shows out. It really would help to pay for whatever overhead, buy any new recording equipment we may need in the studio. Also, if you want to learn more about Windows Server 2008 R2, Windows Server 2012, or VMware ESXi, and you like the way things go here with the podcast, then you probably will enjoy taking those courses online. You can sign up for them courses at tipsfromtheserveroom.com, look for the online class link at the top of the page and click on that, and those courses are sitting there for you. They are self-paced. You just watch a short little video, take a couple question quiz. Once you get through the course, I will mail you a certificate, and you can use that for framing. It's good for putting with your resume and many other items. You can send it off to your employers, and it seems to work pretty well for most people. Once again, you can check those courses out at tipsfromtheserveroom.com. You'll also find the Amazon link there also at tipsfromtheserveroom.com. And don't forget to follow me on Twitter. That's at Technoman. I would greatly appreciate it. Folks, have a great work week, and I will be back here next Tuesday night again on Spreaker.com. So it's Spreaker.com/JacksTechCorner. And that happens at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. And we'll see you there. We can be live and you can chat. Take care, everyone. Keep your network safe and secure, and I'll see you back here next Tuesday. Bye for now. You just listened to Tips from the Server Room with your host, Jack. If you have any questions, please drop me a comment at tipsfromtheserveroom.com. Thanks again for tuning in and downloading the shows. Now sit back, relax, and listen to the remainder of the music. We'll see you next week on Tips from the Server Room. So long.